Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. It's great having you join me for another conversation. We're going to have a really profound discussion today about a topic that you may not have been thinking too much about, but after today's interview, I think it will be quite an eye-opener and very relevant for many, many of you listening in. Before we go there, however, I do want to announce to everyone that I have a very special webinar coming up. So this is a great opportunity for me to let you know. And it is next Wednesday. You just need to go to my website, whatwomenmustknow.com, or go to my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know. And this is a webinar that I am revealing the secrets of how I lost 30 pounds and transformed my body down 4 dress sizes. This happened to me 6 years ago when I was really desperate, and I have been developing programs based on a totally new paradigm. It's not about, you know, reducing calories. It's not about exercising. It's about your brain. And I am going to be sharing some exciting paradigm-busting concepts, and it will also introduce you to a program that I am starting in the beginning of April, right after we all indulge in our chocolate Easter bunnies and ready to make some changes so we can transform our bodies and transform our health. So please, please, please go to either my website and opt in there, whatwomenmustknow.com, or my Facebook page, What Women Must Know, because that is where you can get more information. And if you go over to my website or the Facebook page, there is a very special ebook I've written waiting for you that will help you really understand how to transform your body and get the part of your brain that controls metabolism working again, so you can lose up to a pound a day of toxic fat. Well, anyway, that's my tease. Go check it out. I promise you it's profound and really works. So, okay, let's talk about our conversation today. We're really very privileged to have Dr. Howard Hinden talking with us. We're going to be talking about a subject that, as I said earlier, you probably haven't given much thought about, but a high percentage of people are doing this very unhealthy thing. And the very unhealthy thing we're going to be talking about today is mouth breathing. So right now, just take a moment. Is your nose all stuffed up? Is it hard for you to breathe out of your nose? Do you get complaints of snoring at night? Do you find that you are mostly focusing on breathing through your mouth rather than your nose? Now, this may seem like a mere inconvenience for you, certainly not an inconvenience for whoever's sleeping next to you if you're snoring, but it goes much deeper than that. So we're going to be exploring the health risks and the solutions for those of you that are mouth breathers. And my guest today, Dr. Howard Hinden, is a passionate crusader to support the research and the solutions that are affecting so many people. We'll learn the statistics, but first a little bit about Dr. Hinden. He is a dentist, a highly qualified dentist, trained in all aspects of general dentistry with an early emphasis on surgery and endodontia. Since the 1990s, his practice has also focused on cosmetic dentistry, temporomandibular joint disorders, TMJ as it's known as, craniofacial pain, dental sleep medicine, and complementary medicine, as well as advocacy for patient and doctor rights. An acknowledged pioneer in the relationship between dental issues and whole body health, Dr. Hinden is president of the Foundation for the Advancement of Innovative Medicine. The foundation offers educational services to professionals and the public on complementary medicine, as well as advocacy for patient and doctor rights. In addition, Dr. Hinden advanced the use of acupuncture in dentistry and general medicine as the director of the acupuncture program for substance abuse in Rockland County in New York. There he developed, supervised, and trained personnel to provide acupuncture for the Rockland County Alcohol and Substance Abuse Outpatient Services. He is also an active member of the American Academy of Pain Management, American Academy of Craniofacial Pain, American Academy of Dental Sleep Medicine, Academy of General Dentistry, American Dental Association, International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology, and the New York State Society of Acupuncture for Physician and Dentist. Dr. Hinden has presented important position papers to dental and medical groups throughout the country. His research into the dental-medical connection and systemic balance has shaped the medical community's understanding of this growing and important field. Dr. Hinden is the co-founder of the Academy of Physiologic Medicine and Dentistry and a nonprofit to prevent the proliferation of chronic diseases in the United States based on airway, sleep, and breathing awareness, research, and education. So, let me take a breath. It's my great pleasure to welcome Dr. Howard Hinden to the show because he has some very inspiring and important information to share with us. So, welcome.
Thank you, Cheryl. Glad to be with you today.
We were talking before the show. I'm just so impressed. You're such a dedicated and busy man doing so much pioneering work in the field of dentistry and the connection between dentistry and general health, which is getting more and more notoriety these days as we understand that the mouth and the body are not separated at all. They are all part and parcel of the same system that we need to understand. So first of all, I just want to acknowledge you and congratulate you for that quality that keeps you open and searching and, you know, out there, you know, exploring other paradigms like acupuncture in dentistry, which I'm sure was, you know, you were a pioneer back then, and bringing it into the mainstream. So thank you for the great work and for that curious mind you have, you know.
And I'm excited to be on your show today and talk to you about the thing that is really probably one of the most important things that I've been involved in my life. It's how we breathe, the way we breathe, and the effort we expend in breathing, and how it affects us 24 hours every day of our lives. And so I think this is a topic because we refer to it as the hidden airway problem because obviously everybody who's listening to your show is breathing or they wouldn't be listening. But there are things like with mouth breathing is one of them, but many things where their breathing problems exist and they're not expressed as breathing problems. They're expressed as many other things like chronic disease, inflammation, and in children, learning disabilities or even ADD and ADHD.
So let's start at the beginning. What I want to ask you is how prevalent is this issue of mouth breathing? And people breathe out of their mouth because their nasal passages are blocked for one reason or another.
Okay, right? So that's true, but we need to really expand it. It's not just that they're breathing through their mouth. A lot of people who have airway problems are indeed mouth breathers, but they don't have to be breathing through their mouth to have an airway problem. Often people who do have an airway problem are mouth breathers. But I would say that in any practice, dental, medical, 50% of patients who walk in, at least 50% who walk into an office every day have an airway problem.
So what else defines an airway problem if it's not just about mouth breathing?
Well, airway is related. Let's just look at what happens at night when we sleep. When we are sleeping, and sleeping is the most selfish thing we do in our lives because it's the one thing in our life that we do that we can't do with anybody else. That when we're ready to go to sleep, we do it by ourselves. If we are not breathing properly when we're asleep, we could snore. And you don't have to necessarily have an open mouth, be a mouth breather to snore, although most snorers are mouth breathers. Or if it gets even worse, the end of that sleep disordered breathing continuum is sleepy apnea. So we all know about sleep apnea, we know about snoring, but there's another part where in order to have sleep apnea, you need to be to stop breathing more than 5 times a minute, with each episode of stopping breathing being 10 seconds or more. But if you have 1 or 2 and you don't stop breathing, but your brain says, I think I'm going to stop breathing, and sends out this messenger called adrenaline that wakes you up, and you wake up several times during the night and you don't get that good quality sleep, you really don't qualify for having apnea, so you don't qualify for treatment, but you still have the same effects that you would have as if you had apnea, meaning that daytime sleepiness, poor memory, difficult paying attention, more prone to chronic pain, digestive problems, headaches, and many other things. And if you're a kid, it would be problems learning in school. Dr. Steve Sheldon, who is the head of pediatric medicine, Lurie's Children's Hospital, says that probably up to 80% of children who are diagnosed with ADD or ADHD have a sleep problem. Now, it doesn't mean that everyone has, but how many children might be put on medication and be labeled as defective because nobody's looked about how they're breathing and how they sleep?
So you say they have a sleep problem, it's because they have a high, in these children, there's a high percentage who breathe through their, have airway issues, put it that
way?
They
could be mouth breathers, or they when they go to bed at night, they don't breathe well. And if you think about, we have these two tubes, our nose and our mouth. That's the only place we take in the air that we need to get oxygen to every cell of our body. And so that if anything blocks those tubes, let's say you have allergies and your nose, the membranes in your nose swell and the air can't come in, you have to work harder to breathe. Or if you have tonsils or adenoids, you work harder to breathe because your airway gets smaller. If your dental arches didn't develop properly, and instead of there being nice round arches, they're narrow and the teeth are crowded, and there's no room for the tongue, you work harder to breathe. If you can't put your tongue in the right place and you swallow improperly, where your tongue sticks forward instead of up against the roof of your mouth, you're going to work harder to breathe. So there's a whole list of things, and there's no rule that says you only have to have one problem. You could have all these problems put together, and so you work harder. And the one thing that we find in our practice is we see patients who never would think that they have an airway problem or a breathing problem or a mouth breathing problem. They have other things. They have chronic pain. They have irregular heartbeats. They've been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. They have trouble losing weight and they feel guilty about it. And the list goes on. And they get treated, and they get managed, and get medication, and they are accept the fact that they have a problem that they're going to have to be managed for the rest of their life. But it may not be true, because the two things that go very hand in hand are airway sleep problems and improper nutrition. And when those two things are addressed and dealt with, it is incredible how many people either get reduction of symptoms or really are improved. We saw a patient last week who was diagnosed with atrial fibrillation, and when her sleep problem was addressed, she went back to her cardiologist, and there's no sign of that anymore.
Wow, so she was breathing through her mouth? Is that what was happening to her
for whatever reason? Breathing through her mouth, but try to picture this. You have a... Our tongue is the front wall of our airway, and our tongue fits in this nice little house surrounded by teeth when we close our mouth. And if that little house is too small, there's only one direction that our tongue could go when our mouth is closed, and that's back. And when our tongue goes back, what does it do? It makes our airway smaller. And why do we compensate for not having enough room in the house where we open our mouth and we stick our tongue forward? So sleeping with an open mouth posture is often a compensation for not having enough room in your mouth for your tongue. This particular patient, when she was younger, in order to do her orthodontic treatment, had teeth removed because she was told there's not enough, your teeth are too big for your mouth, so we have to take out teeth. And so now, if you think about it, when all the teeth are brought back together, back into the mouth and retracted, what does that do? What does that make the house where your tongue lives? It gets smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that do to your airway? It gets smaller. What does it do to the effort that you need to breathe? It gets harder. Those of us in New York, and my friend and compatriot who informing the Airway for Health Foundation, Michael Gelb, we started the foundation because we realized that the patient we see for TMJ and chronic pain problems, we should never have to have seen. They should have been taken care of when they were younger and had these problems addressed, and they should never have had their teeth extracted for orthodontic reasons. I mean, there is no reason, like I will go out on a limb and say there's no reason to take out teeth when you have orthodontic treatment.
Well, that must have been the trend, because I had mine taken out when I had my braces because they couldn't fit into my mouth, because obviously I'm one of those people, you know, with more narrow arches and whatever.
Were your teeth were flared out?
I think they were, you know, kind of buck teeth and you know, crowded. You know what I mean? So, and I mean, that's what was done. I mean, those were, you know, it's like God knows how long ago that was, but it must have been the trend, right?
That was the belief, and beliefs aren't necessarily based upon anything that was the
right.
Current belief at that time, because you have to make room for the teeth, and you can't remodel the bone because you can't make things bigger. You can only make things smaller. But now we know that bone can actually be remodeled easily in children. Now children get expanders. There are all types of expanders to make the arches wider. And that goes back to nutrition, because one of the reasons that we're beginning to get these narrow, small arches where there's not enough room for the teeth is because our nutrition has been altered, the nutrition of mothers, of expectant mothers, or even before they become pregnant, and the nutrition of children is not good. I mean, I'm sure you're familiar with the work of Weston Price.
Mm-hmm, of course,
Where he looked at these tribes and societies where they had a traditional diet with no processed food, no sugary drinks, and these faces, beautiful, well-rounded faces, wide nostrils, very few health problems. And then when the Western sugar-laced diet was introduced, in a couple of generations, you saw tooth decay, you saw narrow faces, you saw crowded teeth. So what I'm saying is nutrition and these problems go hand in hand. So now there's not enough room for the teeth, so they take out teeth. But it doesn't have to be that way. New type of orthodontic treatment is called like orthotrophic, started by this great 80-year-old now orthodontist in England, where instead of waiting till all the baby teeth fall out, you start orthodontic treatment as early as 3 years old, as soon as you see the face not developing properly, and you expand the dental arches. You actually will take teeth and you make them buck, and then you let the face grow into the teeth, as opposed to moving the teeth to fit into a poorly formed face.
And I mean, and this is profound, opening up the arch and expanding, because that supports proper breathing. I mean, that's why you're so focused on these alternatives of working with an orthodontic approach, is this new understanding, because of the downstream effects of what happens when we are able to breathe properly compared to when we have compromised breathing to our overall health. Let's go back to your patient with AFib. So you were able to get to alter her breathing, and it eliminated her AFib. Her heart started. How did that?
So what we did was we made her an appliance, something that fit over her teeth, that was a sleep appliance, which basically made more room in her mouth for her tongue. And it helped her breathe better at night. Because think about if you're not getting enough oxygen. There's only a couple of things that we can do. We can breathe faster. We can breathe deeper. Our heart can beat harder, or our heart can beat faster, or we can raise our blood pressure. That's it. Those are all the options. So can you imagine during the night that maybe 10, 15, 20, 30 times every hour we're not getting enough oxygen, our oxygen levels begin to go down because our tongue is beginning to restrict our airway, and the brain says, oh my God, we're not breathing. What do? The heart starts to beat faster. Then you either wake up or you change your position, then you breathe in, and the heart slows down. And this happens over and over again. And eventually that throws off the heart rhythm because it's you're continually stressing the body repeatedly through these episodes with lower oxygen. And so by taking the stress off the nervous system, the autonomic nervous system, and toning down the levels of adrenaline, that was enough for this particular patient to really reverse her atrial fibrillation.
So she was in this continuous stress state that was affecting her.
When she, right, you know, her, you know, we know about the stress state where this adrenaline state. In fact, one of the hallmarks of people who have an airway problem are these people who are hypervigilant type of people. It's like it's a type of person who need they're adrenaline addicts, basically. If they know that they can comfortably do four things in an hour, they always plan six. If they know that they have to be there someplace in a half hour, they'll leave when it's 15 minutes. So they're always running. They're always in situations. They put themselves in situations so that they will be stressed because they need that adrenaline. And so if any of the listeners are that type of person and they're battling any one of these things that we have talked about and we're going to talk about, they really should have somebody look at their airway and whether they have a sleep problem.
So a couple of things I want to ask you. What are some of the health? Actually, let me start with this question. What is the role of obesity, being overweight, and impaired airway breathing?
Well, we can look at it two ways. How does obesity affect the airway? And obviously, if you think about it like a car, and you need the air to mix with the fuel, the food that we eat. So if we're not eating well and we're maybe having too many carbohydrates, we need more oxygen to burn that. And if we don't, and because of that, we're going to gain weight. And if we gain weight, the tissues around our throat will begin to get bigger. So one of the hallmarks of somebody who might be at greater risk for apnea is a size 17 neck or bigger for a man and a 16 for a woman. Almost every man that has a 17-inch or larger neck, no matter whether they're obese or not, probably has some degree of sleep apnea. On the other side of the coin, if somebody's not sleeping and they're tired during the day, they will always crave carbohydrates or something sugar during the day, because when you're tired and you're ready to fall asleep, you need a stimulant to keep you going. You can't go down. You can't go lay down and take a nap during the day. So you crave sugar because that makes the tiredness go away. Similarly, like kids who have ADD, what is the medication that you get for ADD? It's a stimulant, right?
Mm-hmm. Ritalin, yep.
So here's somebody who's hyperactive, and you give them a stimulant. You give them Ritalin. What sense does that make? So originally you said, well, there's something in these children's brains that are sort of like reversed or something. So the stimulant acts as something to calm them down. And for years, this is what was accepted, which, if you think about it, it makes no sense at all.
Mm-hmm.
But what in fact happens is that when kids are sleepy and they're fighting the sleep, because kids are really, when you have an airway problem, you fight going to sleep because your brain believes it's dangerous. And so you give a stimulant, the sleepiness goes away, and then the hyperactivity calms down. You know, how many people probably listening to your show will fall asleep on the couch and could be fast asleep, and then their spouse or significant other will say, come up to bed, and they get into bed and they lay down, and now they're in a position where their airway's more prone to collapse. Now they can't sleep. You know, they say, I could sleep fine on the couch, and now I go up to bed, I can't sleep, because now they're laying down as opposed to sitting up. So the other thing that happens with obesity, aside from the sleepiness, craving, carbohydrates, is when you don't sleep, it affects your leptin receptors. Your leptin receptors are those little receptors or places in the brain that you get messages that tell you, you've eaten enough, you're full. And when those receptors aren't working, there is no awareness that you've eaten enough and you keep eating.
Mm-hmm.
Children who have had radiation for brain cancer, where the leptin receptors have been damaged by the radiation, can be 7, 8, 9 years old and weigh 500, 600 pounds because they never know that they've eaten enough. You know,
yeah.
that's Robert Lustig, who is a big advocate of getting rid of high fructose corn syrup. He's a pediatric endocrinologist, and that's how he got involved in this work, by understanding how that kids will just eat because there's no message that ever tells them you've eaten enough. So lack of sleep will damage leptin receptors also. And he refers to a combination of poor diet and poor sleep, airway problems, as a perfect storm, which becomes really hard to treat, because if you treat one and not the other, you're not going to get the same beneficial results.
So some airway issues are structural. It's the shape of our palate, it's our teeth, it's, you know, maybe blocked septum. There's some structural things there. And some of the problems have to do with the creation of swelling of tissues due to inflammation that comes from diet toxicity. Am I correct in assuming that?
Right. So just picture you're at the bottom of a swimming pool, and you could either breathe through a soda straw or a garden hose. Which would you feel more comfortable breathing through? Obviously, a garden hose would be, you would feel you'll be getting more than air and then a soda straw. And so anything that narrows the openings structurally, be it shape of dental arches or swelling or inflammation, will make your airway more restricted and make the breathing either close down or more difficult. You have to expend more energy. The problem is when you're working harder, it makes a difference, because you're in this adrenaline, what they call sympathetic nervous system, is upregulated, just working harder. And that eventually affects all aspects of your life. Let me tell you about an interesting study done by this woman in University of Rochester, Dr. Niedergaard. Working on rats, she showed that when you sleep at night and you sleep properly, good sleep, good oxygenation, your brain actually shrinks, or the brains of rats shrink, and it allows more cerebral spinal fluid to flow in and actually detoxifies the brain. And the thing that they were looking at was beta amyloid. Beta amyloid is the substance that accumulates in the brain and is responsible for Alzheimer's. Now, they know that people who have accumulate beta amyloid, it goes up during the day and goes down at night. So the possibility is that sleep is a protective mechanism even against Alzheimer's, which is so that, you know, the question always is, why do we need to sleep? Why waste a third of our life sleeping? But it seems it has a very important physiological function, many important physiological functions. So the structure is important, and the function is important. And the main thing is that the airway problems are not expressed as breathing problems. They're expressed as in some other way. And if you end up at a cardiologist office or an endocrinologist or a pain center or a psychiatrist or a psychologist, they may never even have a thought that the patient could be having an airway or a sleep problem. That could be a very significant part of their problem.
So one of the major factors that could be driving various health and even psychiatric conditions, being the way we're breathing, how we're oxygenating, is not really addressed in most situations. So one of the major causes of these conditions is totally ignored because people are, you know, oblivious to it.
I think that if we could help people breathe and sleep better and eat better and avoid the environmental toxins, many of our health problems would be reduced and there'd be much less need for medications, which they can have their own problems from taking medication. And, you know, when we had our group, the FAME group that you mentioned back in the 80s and 90s, our tagline was, take charge of your health. So taking charge of how you breathe, sleep, and eat is something that every one of your listeners as a patient can do. They can be their own best health advocate, as opposed to going for treatment for any one of these chronic diseases, be it diabetes or high blood pressure, where you're put on medication and then you're told you're going to be managed for the rest of your life. You know,
is that
what you want?
So I want us to talk about children, because some of the research that you told me about previously was so amazing, so, you know, just mind-blowing to me. I want to share it with my listeners because it's not really appreciated how so many of the issues and challenges and neurological issues that are affecting children, be it autism or other conditions, have a direct correlation with how they're breathing and can be altered when you change their breathing.
Mm-hmm. Right. So one of the things your listeners can do, go on Google. Google Finding Connor Deegan, CONNORDEEGAN. It's a little video that we made about an 11-year-old child from the Chicago area who was diagnosed with ODD. ODD is oppositional defiant disorder, which is an aggressive form of ADD. Getting D's and F's in school. Behavior problem, about to be thrown out of school, and about to be put on medication because he was just impossible. Somehow his mother, who was a massage therapist and watched the way he was sleeping and breathing, said, I just have this intuitive belief that there's a problem here, and somehow ended up in the office of somebody, a sleep doctor, who diagnosed a sleep problem, and he had a combination of these therapies. He had his tonsils and adenoids removed. He had expansion orthodontics to make his airway better. He was treated for his allergies, which shrunk his nasal tissues. And in less than a year, he was getting A's and B's, no behavior problem. He came to one of our conference meetings, and he sat through a whole day of lectures without any problem. And so I would encourage anybody who has a problem or children have a problem, just look at that to see what the possibilities are.
Wow.
Will it help everybody? Nothing helps everybody, but at least it should be looked at.
Can you talk about that study that was done out of Cornell with Tourette syndrome? Talk about that study, because that was incredible.
Okay, so this is an ongoing study, and so the study hasn't been finished yet. But this wonderful dentist, who happens to be my son, Jeff Hinden, is working on a project with Weill Cornell Medical Center with their movement disorder behavior problem with Tourette's kids. And there's been some evidence, some clinical evidence that shows when children wear a certain appliance that opens up their bite, it balances something, and the tics go away or they get greatly reduced. So this study is to show, well, does this really work? And we're trying, and it took about 2 years or 3 years to really set up the study because it has to be a double-blind study. And basically what happens is the children in the study go to Cornell Wild. They get diagnosed. They either have their jaw they're put in the right bite position or the wrong position. Then we make the appliance for them, or Jeff makes the appliance. And then they go back and get checked. And so far, the preliminary results seem to be very good. They're going to be presenting something at the World Tourette's Conference in, I think, June or July in London. But the reason we think it works is because we're opening up their airway. And if you could just imagine that if somebody came up behind you and put their hand over your nose and mouth and you didn't let you breathe, you would be flailing around and cursing because you're not breathing. So it's very possible that this could be one of the reasons behind Tourette's, because, you know, with the medication that's available today, there's I think a 30-50% improvement, and the preliminary results we're getting with the dental appliance are better than that. So this holds great possibilities for the future.
I mean, that's so amazing. What you did give me a statistic of the improvement of these Tourette syndrome.
Well, there were only a few. We haven't done a lot, but of the ones that have been, the average improvement is 85% of the ones that were done. You know, and this is just a very preliminary study, but the possibilities are great. I mean, to see somebody walk into the office, can't sit still, head twitches and shoulder moving and just instantly. It's not like go home, wear it for a while, see you feel better, or go home, take this pill and see how you feel in the morning. It's instantly.
Do you see go ahead.
The reason it's instantly is because as soon as our brain gets a message that our breathing is easier and without effort, our whole nervous system calms down. You know, that's the basis of, you know, meditation and yoga. Yoga is all about breath, and it calms down things instantly. It's the most amazing thing when you see it.
You know, I was a breath therapist, and my practice as a psychotherapist, I actually incorporated certain breathing techniques in my practice, and it was focused, obviously, on breathing deeply down to the very bottom of your lungs, which you can only do if you're a nose breather. A nose breather. So in order to fully access and stimulate the parasympathetic as well as the sympathetic nervous system, you have to be breathing deeply through your nose and expanding the lungs all the way down to your diaphragm, which can only happen if you're nose breathing. So if you're mouth breathing, you're always stimulating the sympathetic nervous system and not balancing it with the parasympathetic nervous system, which is really quite profound.
That's true, but imagine that your airway is constricted by many of the things we talked about. Then when you take a deep breath, be it through your nose or your mouth, you're not going to be able to take a deep breath because you're not getting a full amount of air with each breath.
Right.
But interesting, based upon what you said about being a therapist, we have a number of patients who are therapists, and I said, if you have a patient who you have difficulty communicating, they're not willing to share things with you, and you probably know when somebody's in a more sympathetic adrenaline mode, they're hypervigilant, they're protective, they're not going to be more open. You want to get people down to that nice yin parasympathetic place where they feel safe, and they're more likely to share things that with you. So I tell them, when you see a patient like that, make them sit up in the chair, bring their shoulders back, and bring their head back, and which will allow them to breathe deeper. And I'm sure you've seen that, as soon as somebody is breathing deeply, their face changes.
Yes.
The muscles relax. They get more color in their face. And I said, just take a minute, let them breathe. And as soon as you see that change, then ask them the same question that they were not able to answer, and you get a completely different response.
Yes.
So I think you're a pioneer in that you were doing that breath work along with your psychotherapy.
Yeah, it was very profound. I want you to talk a little bit about the role of this airway issue and children with autism or on the spectrum. What have you seen there?
Difficult to say. You know, some people report that there's a factor with autism. I would hold my comments for now because we haven't seen. We've had some children that have benefited, but we've also had many children who haven't. And it's also hard to do therapy or to do orthodontic or do expansion on children with autism. They're not necessarily able to be cooperative and compliant. So.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't put that out. Treating the airway is the first line of treatment for children with autism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about some of the solutions that you are offering and recommending to people. What are some of the practical things people can do to start opening up airways? And if they need more support and assistance, where would they, you know, what are these devices you talked about and how can they access them? So let's go through the whole range of solutions.
First, starting before birth, the diet and state of the mother are important, because if a mother's diet isn't good and if they gain too much weight during pregnancy, they themselves will have a sleep airway problem. It will change their nervous system to be a nervous system that's more upregulated, and that will be conveyed to their fetus.
Mm.
Then child is born. Breastfeeding certainly has huge value, because when a baby nurses, they don't really suck the milk. What they do is they press the nipple up against the palate, and that's what expresses the milk. And so that breastfeeding actually trains the tongue to go to the proper place.
Mm.
And the way that our dental arches are formed is a balance of the muscles of our tongue on the inside and our lips and cheeks on the outside. And so breastfeeding helps to develop the right muscles with the right degree of force and balance to form nice dental arches. So that then the third thing is, if there is a problem like allergies or problem with foods, and it affects the breathing, or these kids who have it looks like there's always their nose is always running and stuff. Well, doing simple things like just getting a swab and cleaning out the nose and keeping the nose clear and so that mouth breathing doesn't develop. Once mouth breathing develops, then you begin to go on a different path of development, where the dental arch, your roof of your mouth, becomes narrower and begins to move up into the nose. It's sort of like the brain saying, well, you know, I'm not really using my nose that much. Why do I need so much room? Let me just grow my palate up into that so I can breathe more through my mouth. So then you begin to go down that path. So by age 2 or 3, you can already see children developing in that way.
Wait, Howard, can I just interrupt? Because
sure.
I want us to talk about pacifiers, the use of pacifiers by babies,
mm-hmm.
and how they can be creating an improper arch development.
Okay, well, you know.
Is that true, first of all?
Why are they called pacifier? Because it keeps the kid quiet and the parents are happy, but it doesn't. There isn't a good pacifier on the market that really helps form a better arch and an airway.
People don't think about that, though, that the pacifier they're using actually is not positioned properly and can be encouraging the development of a high arch rather than a proper wider arch.
Mm-hmm. Right, because it isn't the same as breastfeeding.
Uh-huh.
So when a child is 2 or 3, they're not too young to start treatment. Let me tell you, my two of my grandchildren from my daughter's children, the older one would nurse, and it would take 30, 45 minutes and nurse. And the second one, who was being breastfed, 5 minutes the most, finished, went longer between meals. He was satisfied, and it turned out because the young one, Coda, was a better breather, nose breather. He didn't have to keep stopping to breathe.
Hmm.
And so my granddaughter, when she was 3 or 4, we already realized that her arch was now getting narrower, and we did a combination of expanded her dental arches, but also went to cranial sacral therapy and changed in nutrition and some Chinese medicine. So the thing is to be open to the multitude of things that are available and what can be worked on together. There's a whole body of treatment called myofunctional therapy, where you retrain the muscles by learning to put your tongue up behind your teeth. You know, there's this little piece behind our upper front teeth that gets burnt from pizza. There's a little bump. That when we put our tongue there, our tongue should be where our tip of the tongue is, and it never goes forward. Our tongue should not touch our teeth when we swallow. The tip should stay there, and then the tongue should just roll up along the palate. That's how we swallow. Our tongue creates this sort of wave that goes to the back of the mouth and brings food down to the back of our mouth. And when you swallow incorrectly, it becomes a habit. So even after you've expanded the arches and you go back and you push the child towards the better path for growth and development, there could be bad habits that were formed because this is how the muscles work. So going back and getting a good myofunctional therapist who can retrain the tongue, you know, they do like an exercise where they'll put a button between your lips and try to pull it out, so the child has to learn how to have good suction. So you strengthen. It's like going for a physical therapy for your tongue and your lips, and it has great benefits. If there is a myofunctional problem and a child has orthodontic treatment, it will always relapse because if the muscles are an orthodontic device, the tongue is an orthodontic device. So that if the mouth isn't open and the tongue is protruding, the upper teeth will actually push forward and the lower teeth will be pushed in. So the myofunctional therapy is another mode of treatment. Nutrition, very important, because if you're going to do expansion therapy, which is basically trying to remodel and rebuild the bone, you need to have good nutrition. What is important is vitamin D, which I'm sure you've talked about on your show,
mm-hmm.
having the right fats, because vitamin D is an essential fatty acid, and vitamin D works along with vitamin A and vitamin K2. Has vitamin K2 been a discussion on your show at all?
Mm-hmm.
The vitamin K2 actually tells the calcium where to go. And so now we're trying to recreate, re-go back and change and remodel the growth of the face. And we have their great orthodontic expansion devices, but you still need the basic good nutrition in order to make that bone heal and grow in the proper way. Then you get, go down the spectrum a little bit older. There's other orthodontic treatment that could be done. The wonderful thing is that even in adults, now you can get good expansion because of, this is sort of like math, because of the way the mouth works, that even expanding a millimeter forward or 2 millimeters forward will have a tremendous, it's almost like a, because it's like a logarithm, it has a multiple of effect because the airway is a circle or a cube, and even a millimeter or two of expansion of the teeth will make a big difference. What happens when people get older? Everything tends to get more crowded. If the tongue doesn't have the right position, the back teeth tend to tilt or slant towards the tongue, which tends to make the airway even smaller. So getting some sort of expansion, where you, even using Invisalign, where you upright the teeth, will give more airway and help with a lot of the health problems. So we're talking about nutrition, orthodontics, looking at the tonsils and adenoids, getting rid of allergies, and sometimes getting rid of allergies is just eliminating the foods that shouldn't be eaten, getting rid of the dairies, you know, because humans were the only mammals that have milk after we finished nursing and weaning. And a lot of people just don't do well with milk, or they don't do well with gluten, which will provoke the allergies and change the breathing and change the arch formation.
Because the allergies initiate inflammation, which swell tissue. So that's why it's so important to eliminate those allergens. And I wanted to ask you your thoughts on doing nasal washes. There's all sorts of different devices that can actually, whether it's saline solution or other solutions that can be, put into the nasal cavity, and you can actually
anything you do that would help. Neti pots, excellent.
Yes. An old Ayurvedic tradition, very old. they were onto something way back then.
Well, you know, they felt that breathing was really important because. Mm-hmm. They weren't blessed or cursed with having all the great pharmaceuticals that we have today.
Yeah.
You know.
There's a.
They had to take care of themselves, because if you didn't take care of yourself, you can get sick and die. But somehow along the way, we have allowed our health to be the product of some doctors to take care of. You know, the doctor should take care of your emergencies and be your teacher, to teach you how to take better care of yourselves. You know, and the best thing a doctor can do for you is get you to the point where you don't need him anymore.
You know, there was a conference that I went to that was talking about the benefits of xylitol, which happens to be my favorite natural sweetener, and all the health benefits, and there's a nasal wash made with xylitol that you just kind of spray the bottle up into your nasal cavity. Uh-huh. You can put it into a neti pot.
Great.
Because it reduces the bacteria from adhering to those tissues, and it also just clears them up. So a lot of the nasal problems have to do with various bacteria and infections going on in that environment. So,
yeah,
so that's a simple thing to do.
Xylitol decreases the growth of Streptococcus mutans, which is the bacteria that cause tooth decay and ear infections and a lot of infections. And the belief is that a lot of ear infections occur because the strep mutans migrates up from the mouth up into the ear. And so by the xylitol spray or the lozenges or the gum will reduce the strep mutans and reduce the incidence of of ear infections. The other part of that is the strep mutans cannot grow in an alkaline environment. It has to be an acid environment. So, again, you know, I'm sure you must have talked about the inflammatory versus the non-inflammatory diets. Some more more vegetables in the diet will keep things more alkaline. What we do with our patients, we have them put 10 drops of hydrogen peroxide, which is 3% hydrogen peroxide, in water and rinse with that for about a minute, because that will reduce the acidity and make the mouth more alkaline. Then you go and chew the xylitol gum, and it will be, or nose spray, whatever, it'll be more effective that way.
Yeah, great advice. That's fantastic. You know, I think it's bringing this issue to people's awareness and then providing solutions. And if people have more, you know, chronically impaired airways, that's where a trained dentist like yourself come in, or other practitioners. Can we talk a little bit about the Foundation for Airway Health, which is your website, foundationforairwayhealth.org? Is that a place where people can find practitioners who are trained in this?
So what we've done is we created this place called the Foundation for Airway Health. It's www.foundationforairwayhealth.org, and it's for to raise money to raise awareness for all these things that we've discussed for the last hour or so, and to do research and to provide access for all. One of our taglines is Airway for All, because early intervention is so important. Aside from it's better to intervene early, it's less expensive. Doing expansion orthodontics when your child is 8, 9, 10, 11 years old, you're looking at $8,000, $10,000, $12,000, and that immediately eliminates a good part of the population from care. So this is what our foundation is about. You can go and find more information on our website. There are also links to other organizations and places where you can go for get more information, because there are so few practitioners who are really savvy about this compared to the number of people who need care. We hope that as our message gets out to people needing the care, practitioners will say, I want to be part of this paradigm shift, where I'm going to be able to not only, as a dentist, fix teeth, but change lives and restore people's potential.
Well, that's your mission, and I want to say that people really need to go to your website, foundationforairwayhealth.org. And we've come to the end of the show. This has been so fascinating, and you've really inspired me to help get the message out. So, Dr. Howard Hinton, thank you for being with us today. It's been a really wonderful conversation. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And to all my listeners, thank you for joining me for another very in-depth and educational and profound conversation. So stay tuned, come back every week, and also remember to honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now. Mm-hmm.